All right, I'm going to tell y'all how I like to use one of my favorite tools out in the woods, and that is the tracker from Onyx Hunt. So here's how I've been using it lately. I got this new property I'm going to be hunting this year, and the very first thing I did on the property was I went out and I drove all of the roads that are drivable in my truck, and I had the tracker on as I was driving around. So after I got done driving around, I selected the track on my app and changed it to where it's just a solid black line. So now I've got a really nice, easy to see roadmap of everywhere that's drivable in a truck on the property. So here's what that does for me so far. Now I've got an easy to read map of everywhere that you can drive in a truck on the property. But also that roadmap is actually very useful because it makes it very easy for me to see what roads are drivable and what parts of the property are most accessible and what parts of the property are least accessible. Like I said, one of my favorite tools. If you're not using it already, you should be. And if you want to give Onyx a try, go get an Elite membership and use the promo code Southern at checkout. That's going to save you 20% and it's going to help the show out. Know where you stand with Onyx Hunt. If you hunt deer out of trees, you need to go check out latitudeoutdoors.com. They got a little something for everybody, whether you're a saddle guy or if you hunt out of a climber. Of course, Latitude makes some of our favorite saddles and climbing sticks, but they also make some great packs and backpack straps that you can attach to the bottom of a climbing tree stand to make it more comfortable to carry in the woods. Probably my favorite piece of gear I've gotten in the last several years is the Ranger 22 from Latitude. It's like a do-it-all backpack for me. It's compact, which I like, but it's adjustable enough that it gets me through the whole season. It's the only pack I use. I use it in early bow season, when I'm not carrying much in the woods, all the way to late January rut hunts in the deep south when it's cold and I'm carrying all kinds of clothes and all kinds of stuff on my back. The Ranger 22 is adjustable enough that I can just use that one backpack all season. And hey, all you Mossy Oak Bottomland fans, they just released the Ranger 22 in Mossy Oak Bottomland. So like I said, no matter how you like to hunt, Latitude's got something for you. Go check them out at latitudeoutdoors.com.
Well, guys, meet your new favorite summer scouting optic, and no, it's never too early to start scouting for the fall. Introducing the Vortex Crossfire Spotting Scopes with three different models of how you glass. Me and Andrew have both used spotting scopes in the summer to go out and glass fresh, clear cuts that's got a little bit of growth on them to find bachelor groups actually feeding in the summer. It's a pretty fun time, and also it's a great opportunity to take your kids out, especially if you can sit in the truck while you're glassing. It's always one of those pieces of optics like to keep in the truck at all times because you never know when you might need it. Be sure to stop by your local Vortex dealer to get out the all-new Crossfire Spotting Scopes or to get 10% off your favorite spotter, head over to eurooptic.com and enter code Southern10 at checkout to save 10% on your order.
You know, one reason that we named our company the Southern Outdoorsman is because we're not just Southern deer hunters or Southern turkey hunters. We kind of hunt everything: quail, doves, waterfowl, rabbits, squirrels, you name it. I know a lot of you guys are the same way, and our friends at Whitetail Hill are like that as well. Whether you've got a hunting club, a lease, or your own property, they've got a blend for pretty much every situation on a piece of ground. I mean, they've got a seed blend for everything. If you want warm season deer forage, check out Summer Bulk. If you need to screen off a plot or cover an access route, Hideaway grows up to 12 feet tall and is built for that exact purpose. You got a duck hole or a pond edge? Check out the waterfowl blend. You want to plant for doves or quail? Check out their dove and quail plot. If you need soil that needs a little bit of work before fall, check out Dirt Doctor. And of course, they got a full cool season lineup ready to go when fall planting time gets here. And if you're unsure about what to plant, go to whitetailhill.com. They've got a seed selection guide on there that'll help you pinpoint exactly what you need on your property. So y'all check them out today. That's Whitetail Hill. Go to whitetailhill.com. You know, most hunters don't think about their food plots until it's time to throw down some seed for the fall. And if that's the case, you might be leaving a lot on the table. If you want deer using your plots when season opens, you need to give them a reason to be there all summer long. That's how you build movement patterns. Not hoping for them in October, establish them in June. On top of that, bucks are growing antlers right now, does are about to be nursing fawns, and your plots can be a real herd health tool during the summer months, not just a hunting tool come fall. Whitetail Hill has a warm season lineup built exactly for this. Summer Bulk is their big warm season forage blend. It grows 4 to 5 feet tall, holds up to browsing pressure way better than something like soybeans, and it'll carry all the way to the first frost. So it doubles down as an early season food plot for us down here in the south. Then if your soil needs a little bit of work first, check out Dirt Doctor. It builds topsoil, breaks up compaction, and gets your plots in shape for a great fall planting. So check out Summer Bulk and Dirt Doctor at whitetailhill.com. Again, that's whitetailhill.com. You know, if he's going to cover 500 yards between bed and food, if I've only got 200 yards of that travel route that he's using, well, that makes it a lot harder as opposed to
if I've got the whole thing to where he's bedding and he's going to feed on one property, then you just have a lot more options of how you can approach that deer and hunt him. All right, everybody, we're another week closer to deer season. Back on the deer content once again, kind of moved out of turkey season. Here in May, going to be doing some whitetail Q&As on all these Thursday episodes from here on out. If you haven't already, if you got a question, go submit it via our website. We do video Q&As most of the time. But today we're doing some written Q&As from our Facebook page and our Instagram page. Put something on the story the other day about getting some questions in, and we had a whole bunch of people write questions, so we're going to be doing a bunch of those. You know, talking about keying in on spots where cover and food is really common, narrowing down spots on new properties, things of that nature. So, got a lot to talk about today. Jacob, how are you?
I'm doing great. Been looking at some privileged land to potentially join.
So, yeah. So, today I left my old hunting club a couple weeks ago. Sad day. Joined a new club next to the house and, I mean, right next to the house. It's so nice.
The grass is always greener on the other side of the fence.
That's right. So, joined a new place. And today we're going to talk about breaking down a new piece of property. A lot of these questions that we actually got in on our Instagram and Facebook pages had to do with breaking down a new property, scouting a new property, locating new target bucks, things of that nature. So we're going to talk about that for the first part of this podcast, and then we're going to hit some of these other questions. Like, there's a bunch of good ones in here, like, is a saddle setup worth it for strictly rifle hunting? One guy's asking if I still shoot my bow peepless. Hunting big hilltops, mountainous terrain. What are things that we do scouting now that we haven't done in the past? So a bunch of great questions that we're going to hit. But first, we're going to talk about this new property, because throughout the summer, we're going to be going on. I've never hunted this place before, so we're going to be trying to locate new bucks, trying to find what the good rut spots are going to be. So y'all get to follow along with that throughout the summer. It's going to be fun. But this is kind of our thoughts, at least going into it for this first summer scouting season, going into the first deer season on the property. So first thing, I got to ride around the property 2 or 3 weeks ago, right after I joined it. I'd hunted around this property, never hunted this particular club. And they had some openings this year, so I went ahead and jumped into it, see what I could get into. And turkey hunted it like two or three times. Saw a bunch of turkeys. It's got turkeys on it, which is great. Found a lot of deer sign right off the bat. And today, you're interested in actually joining the club also, joining the privileged land hunters. And so I rode you around the property today, and we just kind of looked at a bunch of different roads, scouted road access, drove around, saw what the property looked like, got out and walked a little bit. So, first impressions.
There ain't much old timber on the place.
No.
There's a lot of pines on it, but some of them are like, you can definitely get in a tree. Some of them have been thin, some haven't been thin, some have been treated with herbicide, some haven't. And you were telling me earlier that there's been a lot of guys in this club for like 20, 30 years, and they saw it transition from all hardwoods, upland hardwoods, to 96% probably pines now. And I'm like, that'd be a sad transition.
Yeah.
Sad transition. Cool thing about the property, it's got, I don't know how many longleaf pines stands, but it's got a few of them that they're actually Westervelt's burning, which is super cool to see. Don't see that on a whole bunch of public or a whole bunch of private lease ground. So it's got good habitat diversity from that standpoint. And I'm excited because there's one big section of longleafs on that place. I measure on it. It's like over half mile long, this big ridge system that they cut the whole thing off of. And then they planted longleafs and they burned it. And I'm like, that's going to be like something like you're never, unless you stay in the club for 20 years, you're never going to get a chance to hunt like hanging one of those longleafs. But hunting in and around it from like a turkey standpoint and also for deer is going to be killer. But it's a lot of roads. I think we did 12, it was almost 13 miles we drove on it and saw a fraction of the place. So we just did like a big loop road through it and went down a couple little side roads. But we didn't even get to see the whole place. I think you told me when you got in like last week or 2 weeks ago that you did 19 miles out there and still didn't see everything.
Yep.
So
lots of roads, which is typical of a place that's owned by a timber company. The whole thing's been cut at some point or another over the last 30 or so years. Most of your ridge points, most of your ridge tops are going to have roads on them. Those are the access roads where they get the logging trucks in. There's logging decks all over the place. So it is pines. It is every kind of pine you could want to hunt. There's little thick loblolly pines. There's younger longleaf stands. There's brand new fresh cuts that are full of longleafs that they just burned. There's thinned loblolly stands that are big enough to hang a climber in that are thick underneath. There's some that aren't that thick underneath. And then there's little bitty SMZs, creek drainages that have hardwoods in them.
No duck holes.
No duck holes, unfortunately. Not that, I mean, the duck hunting around here is not great anyway. So it's like, yeah, it is what it is.
Went from going to kill a couple wood ducks here to maybe a couple of passers.
I did jump a covey of quail.
Oh, yeah. You said there's quail out there, which I could see that. But it's the cool thing about this parcel, it's like your old one where it's all like one contiguous track, but the road system is like a double whammy. It's like really good for access. It's also really good access for everybody else. But the cool thing is there's a completely different checkout system with this club compared to your last club. The last club, you had to pin out like to the spot you hunted. Where this club, it is all based off areas. Like every, I don't know how big, some of the areas look huge on the map.
Mm-hmm.
But like you just have, you pin out in a specific area and not as in, like the area, say the area is 300 acres. You pin out for that whole 300 acres. You don't have to put it in a very specific spot, which is really nice. Mm-hmm. So you don't have to let anybody else know exactly where you're sitting.
Yeah, the whole property is 3,900 acres. It's got 20-something members, or supposed to have 20-something. They're still trying to fill a couple slots. It's 3,000-something acres, and it's all one big chunk. It's all one block, which I like. And it's almost a square. I mean, it's just a big block of hunting club, which I like. The old club I was in, it was kind of a long and skinny layout of the property, and I didn't love it because just the way that the terrain set out, I felt like a lot of deer weren't really like living on the property per se. Like, I feel like almost every buck we ever got on camera in the 3 years we hunted that place was not spending the majority of its time on the property. There probably were some, but pretty much all the nice bucks that we found were on the edges and they were leaving the property to go to other places. And so I'm hoping with this club, there's a little bit less of that. And because what makes that difficult is when they're bedding in one spot on you and they're going to your neighbor's house, you've only got so much runway between where they're bedding and where they're going.
Like literally going to your neighbor's house.
Yeah, pretty much. And where they're leaving and you've only got that little section. Whereas, you know, if he's going to cover 500 yards between bed and food, if I've only got 200 yards of that travel route that he's using, well, that makes it a lot harder as opposed to if I've got the whole thing to where he's bedding and he's going to feed on one property, then you just have a lot more options of how you can approach that deer and hunt him. So, and the deer that we killed on the old club, it was like that. We were killing them right next to their bedding, like the bucks that we shot out there. We were killing them right next to their bedding where they're coming out of it to leave the property. And that was like the only place where we could really get on them. Outside of the rut, I mean, in the rut they were doing more, but it still was just always real difficult in the rut. So I'm looking forward to that. I'm excited about that. The other thing about this place is there's so many intersecting ridge systems on it that interest me, where you've got a big ridge system that runs north and south, and then you've got another big ridge system that runs east and west, and they hit each other right in the middle of the property.
There's a bunch of those.
Yeah, it's got a ton of those. And you've got so many little saddles and hubs and little connecting ridge points that are great travel routes, where if a buck's cutting across his property, there's a lot of options for him to travel through. And it's just going to be a matter of, I think, finding which one of those travel routes most bucks go through most of the time.
So let's talk about what you've done so far after hopping into it, because this is the time of year when guys are getting out of hunting clubs and leases and they're getting in new ones, or they're just getting into one if they haven't been in one. Kind of like the circumstance I'm kind of discussing. When doing that, now you got two different clubs, like experiences, like getting into a club in the summertime and you're starting to kind of learn the lay of the land. one thing I want you to talk about, because we're going to talk about like driving roads and getting a feel for everything, but I want you to talk about what areas are like high odd spots that you think you should find bucks on and go in there and try and confirm it, because you've talked about just to me that you've done that and already started finding sign where you thought it should be. Versus on the other club, it wasn't necessarily like that. It was kind of like in weird spots. So, I mean, what was like your, what's been your approach this last three or four times you've been out in the place?
Yeah, that's a good point. Cause on the last club, like how I was mentioning, it was long and skinny. It was weird because half the property was basically flat as a pancake. And the other half is like one big ridge system that makes like this weird bend. And there was never any great little finger ridges that come off. It's just like a pretty abrupt ridge system in the middle of all this flat stuff. And I feel like the deer were spending more time in the flatlands. And because that ridge system ran right through the middle of the property, I felt like they were never just going up and over that ridge system a bunch. They were leaving out of the sides of the property, like continuing on through the flatland stuff. So I think that was one problem. And because of that, whenever I was going and checking the spots where I thought there would be a lot of deer, where that ridge system was, like going and looking at all the terrain features, I would never find scrapes where I thought I was going to find scrapes. Like I'd walk in and find literally nothing. And I'd be like, what the heck, man? Like, because usually I can pick out on a map where there's going to be a scrape most of the time. And when I was walking in there, I just never found it. Same thing with rubs. And then as I just spent more time on the property, I did start locating the buck sign, but it was never where I thought it would be. It was always kind of in weird spots. And on this new place, I went to, again, some of those traditional spots where I think I would find buck sign and immediately started finding it. I mean, right on the little ridge points dropping down off the... off the main ridge system, you have the little secondaries that come off that are lower. And right on top of those, there'll be a scrape, like right where I was hoping I'd find one. And then I'd hop over to the next one, find another scrape. And then in the valley between those two, I'd find a nice trail cutting down the sides of that valley about like two-thirds of the way up the ridge side. So it's like, oh, thank God. I'm like finding sign where I think I'm going to find sign again. And then also, almost every time I've been out there, I've only been out there four times, but almost every time I've seen deer. So crossing roads, finding tracks in the saddles that go through the roads, and the cover. Like there's this one spot in particular I was real interested in. Big thermal hub, they cut right down through the middle of it. So the bottom that you're watching is all thick, like straight down through the creek. There's just some willows along the creek bottom. And I walk down off into that stuff and it's all muddy down there and there's thousands of deer tracks and big trails running through that stuff. And there's a ridge point you can get on up there and watch down all the way through it with a rifle. It just, that spot, I like that spot. Fired me up.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see. I don't know. I haven't put any cameras out yet. I mean, they're not growing. You can't really tell what they're going to be so far, but so far it looks good. Find stuff where I thought.
Well, and also there's a spot that we've always seen a batch group of bucks in October that comes out on one of the border roads for this place. And they're kind of always milling around the edge of the club. Like they're coming off the club and like feeding.
Yeah, because we drive past this club all the time.
Yeah, and there's a spot that like 30 minutes to an hour after dark, they are standing there.
Yep.
Like 2 years in a row, probably. They're always in this spot. And I brought that up to you when you were like talking about joining the club. And once you join the club, I'm like, dude, I don't know what it looks like in there, but I would find an area within 100 and 200 yards of where they're popping out on the side of the road and feeding. Cause there's always like one or two like really good shooters in that group and figure out a place to go. And you went in there and actually found scrapes roughly about that far from that road system.
Yeah.
That's getting used. So like, that's a spot that like, throw a camera up on it, see when they're using it. And for like early season, October hunting in the afternoons, and it sets up fantastic for early season winds.
Yeah.
So it's so money.
Yeah. And when I walked in there, yeah, there's two scrapes right where I was hoping they'd be. Again, right on a little ridge point. They come out on that spot on the road you're talking about. There's a low creek that goes underneath the road, and they're always standing right there where that creek goes under the road. And when that creek goes into the club, there's a little bitty tiny ridge point. It drops like 10 feet. I mean, little small ridge point right there above it. Right there, two scrapes. Big twisted up looking branch. Yeah, dude, it looks so good. Even for rifle hunting, though, it's on an old, like, I guess it was like an old four-wheeler trail or something. that's cut through the woods, and it comes way down off a hill and then flattens out and goes off the ridge point. And you can sit all the way at the top of the hill, and you can see almost down to those scrapes. Like, if you limbed one or two trees, you'd be able to see down to it. So even for rifle, too, because, I mean, I'll see them in that same spot during the rut crossing the road.
Oh, so I always see them early.
It's mostly early season, yeah. But I've seen them in the rut there, too. And it just sets up really good for a rifle hunt, because you could just walk off the top of that ridge point and look down in there from about 120 yards and never even walk off into that stuff. You could just crest over that hill, sit down, just sit on the ground and watch down that four-wheeler trail, catch them crossing it, and then, you know, back out and never get into that area at all. So it sets up really good to hunt it clean also. And there's a bunch of stuff out there like that. And, you know, the road access, it's a double-edged sword because, I mean, it's roaded up. There's roads everywhere. But also, you can access most of these spots from 360 degrees. I mean, there's really not much stuff on the club, not much cover on the club that's too thick for you to walk through. There's good bedding cover, but a lot of it's not just, like, impenetrable. So if you did need to swing through and J-hook on something, you're not going to run into a ton of cover types that are going to prevent you from doing that, which is exciting.
So also, what did you learn from talking to the president of the club of, like, where most of the bucks are getting killed and how most of the people are hunting the club?
He told me that most of the members are just hunting the food plots, and he was saying that most of the deer are just getting shot on the food plots, which I love. I mean, that sounds great to me, because if everybody's just hunting the food plots and the clear cuts and stuff, well, there's so much in between all the food plots and the clear cuts that you can dive off into. And, like, a lot of those food plots and clear cuts are probably good. Like, I'll probably hunt those too. But there's no telling what, again, these little saddles that connect these big ridge systems. That's what the very first thing that got me interested in the club was, that was all these ridge systems meeting each other. And, like, we've talked about it with other people on the podcast before, those little ridge top hubs where those ridges meet, and maybe there's not a saddle right there, but it's just where multiple ridges meet. And you can just, if you zoom out of it on a topo map and do the whole, who was it? Was it Bill Vail was talking about? You know, you draw the lines on the topo map. Like, if you were going to walk the path of least resistance and you just start drawing lines of, like, if I was going to go from here to here, draw a line between them, you know, based on the topo, and just do that in a bunch of areas and then see where all those lines intersect and go check that out. I'm going to do that for sure. I'm going to definitely do that, because that is one thing that's going to be challenging, is there's so much terrain and there's so many ridge points that it could probably get a little overwhelming, because, I mean, there's hundreds of saddles on this place, like hundreds. So the trick is going to be finding which ones are the better saddles, or which ones are the better thermal hubs, or the better drainages, because it looks kind of intimidating when you first look at it, honestly. But
yeah, no, that's a lot. So what else are you planning on doing on this place over the summer to kind of get more familiar with it, but also start finding areas that you're going to try to focus on for early season, but also pay attention to for close to the rut, which this place is going to rut in January?
First thing I'm going to do for early season is I'm just going to go into some of these tighter drainages that have isolated oak trees, which I've already found two of them. And I'm just going to try to find where some oak trees are, maybe around some steeper terrain, especially where they butt up against some of those thin pines, and just try to find where maybe some oaks are going to be dropping. You know, maybe to shoot a buck, but really to bow hunt for does, especially. I think it would just be fun. Go get some meat in the freezer, because I didn't have a great year last year. So we're going to be running thin by the time October gets here, son. So I'm going to go do that for early season. But then as I'm checking these saddles, the ridge points, the thermal hubs, and finding more scrapes, like those two scrapes we already talked about, getting a camera, automatic. Like, I'm going to put a camera out there probably next week and just wait and see when they start showing up. Because like we talked about last week, those bucks, they still work those licking branches in the summertime. So that'll be the start of my buck inventory. So I'll throughout the summer, as I locate scrapes, I'm going to put cameras on the scrapes first. And then as we get closer to season, I'm going to start putting some cameras on some of the better looking food plots and some of the areas of the club that I'm the most interested in. So I don't know where the biggest bucks are going to be, but the way that this club lays out, basically on one side of it, there's a busy road and there's some houses and some pastures and some fields and stuff on one side. and I'm not very interested in that side, at least as much to begin with. There could be nice bucks over there. But on the other side of the club, it's more woods. Like when you get off of our property, it's hardwoods. There's a couple pastures and stuff, but they're all hidden. They're not on busy roads or anything. Because my thought is the bigger bucks on the property are probably going to be on that side because, one, they're not getting run over on the highway. They're probably not getting spotlighted in the busy fields right next, or I mean the fields right next to the busy highway. And generally it just seems like there's probably less hunting pressure over there. Cause on one side of the club where the highway's at, there's another club that gets hunted super, super hard. So I think the bigger bucks are gonna be on that side. So I'm going to focus on that side first and then, you know, shift over if I need to.
You should tell Lee Ellis about that. You know, busy roads and stuff. No big bucks being by that.
Well, listen.
From Sequoia.
Well, yeah. That's true. Hard to argue with that.
It was like in the neighborhoods, baby. Listen. Little woodblock, man. They live in.
That's right. See, I'll probably put some cameras in the plots on that side of the property, and then I'll probably run cameras on scrapes on that other side, near close to the busy road. That's probably what I'll do.
Yeah. Yeah, the one thing about that place is because there is so much roads, like driving through it, it actually could take you, unless you're hunting like the edge of the property, it could actually take you quite a bit of time to drive into some spot because you're not going fast down those roads.
No.
I mean, they're gravel, but like you got to be, like you almost jumped me out of the truck today going down some hill.
Test that suspension.
That's like bouncing left and right, my head banging off the top of the truck. So you gotta be careful, but I was telling you that club sets up so good for if you were using an e-bike, like a pretty powerful e-bike that could handle hills and stuff, that'd be an awesome club for that. I know a lot of guys like love side by sides and stuff. And I mean side by sides are super fun, I mean, to ride in, but like they're so loud. Same thing with like a four wheeler, like I still would be very cautious of driving within a couple, you know, 200-300 yards of where I was gonna hunt at. But like an e-bike, dude, you could zip around all through there, freaking take off side road, stand it up, and just like ease down to your spots. I feel like really well. Especially for turkey hunting out there. Dude, turkey hunting off an e-bike.
Dude.
Which, by the way, we did find out because we did a tour of that place today and drove around it, or you gave me a tour of it. Dude, there's turkeys. We saw 5 jakes and a couple of hens in one food plot. Saw another hen driving around another spot.
Yep. They're out there.
Yeah, so... That's cool because, like, I don't think I've ever driven around your place, your old club, and seen turkeys.
Yeah, it's pretty rare.
So,
an old place. There's just not many places. If it was raining and you drove around, there was a couple spots they'd get in the roads when it was raining. But other than that, yeah, you're just not seeing very many turkeys driving around out there. But yeah, today, dude. Because we walked up on that food plot and I was like, golly, look at all those turkeys. And we started looking at them through the binos and I'm like, that one's a Jake. That one's a Jake. That one's a Jake. That one's a Jake. And it was 5 Jakes and 2 hens in one field. I was like, oh, yeah. See you boys next year.
Mm-hmm.
Please don't get killed this summer.
Yeah, grow some spurs for us.
Grow some spurs, boys.
So also, I mean, just for like advice, like guys getting in a new club, what were like some of the important questions? I mean, you were already pretty much dead. No matter, I don't think what the president told you, you were probably going to get into the club.
Mm.
But like, outside of that, like, what were some, like, the probing questions you asked when you toured the place and try to, like, figure out what you're going to do? Because I also go back to thinking about your other club and some of the questions you asked, because I was with you the day we toured that place, and we were all high and hot and heavy on it because the way it laid out. And, you know, you found some bucks on it, but it just wasn't what you were thinking it was. Did you take anything you learned off the first club when you were going to get into the second club, like, certain questions to ask or anything like that?
Yeah, I mean, I just, kind of like you said, I was probably going to join either way. But I was asking about what the other people in the club, like how they like to hunt, asking about what they wanted to do with the rules. I was asking about the turkey hunting too, like do many guys turkey hunt?
What did he say?
He said there was a couple guys that hunt, but they weren't hearing any gobbles this year. That's what he told me. I was like, okay, cool. Which they killed a hammer of a turkey out there, over 1.5 spurs this year.
And weight-wise.
Yeah.
I mean, he's like some crop field turkeys.
Yeah.
24-pound turkeys, 22-pound turkeys.
Mm-hmm. Big turkeys.
I mean.
Butterballs.
Yeah. That ain't.
24-pound turkey around here is gigantic.
Gigantic.
That's a humongous turkey. And that turkey had 1.9 spurs. So I'm all about that, son. And some of the bucks, they got a logbook where they write down the measurements and everything of the bucks they kill. They killed two bucks over 200 pounds out there last year. Or it might have been three. I know it's two. Mm-hmm. Both of them had over 20-inch beams, over 17-inch spread, which is a great deer. That's a really good deer. So that got me excited.
And also, you got some nice bucks that are skull-capped in the check pin-out board state.
Yeah, they got some really nice bucks in there. But yeah, I mean, that's generally what I was just asking about the food plots and then the rules, because they changed a lot of the rules this year. One of the interesting rules that they changed was you can only run cell cameras. You can't run traditional trail cameras anymore. Only cell cameras, which I guess is to keep the pressure down.
Keep guys from going out there checking them.
Yeah, so people aren't going and checking cameras all the time. So that was interesting. I was really asking him, I was trying to figure out more about the kinds of hunters in the club. I'm like, do they hunt food plots? Are we hunting clear cuts? Like, does anybody bow hunt? He said that not many of them really bow hunted at all. They're all rifle hunters. So it's, from what he was telling me, it sounds like my old club, which is there was maybe two other guys that bow hunted it. And then once rifle season came in, there'll be like two or three people out there a weekend. And then right there around Christmas and New Year's, there'll be a bunch of the guys out there.
Some strict guest policies.
It's like $100 if you bring a guest. You can only bring a guest three times. Each time it's $100, whether they kill something or not.
And so, you can't bring a guest after a certain date, right?
Yeah, I think it was. I can't remember if that was the other one or this one.
I'm pretty sure it was this one because you sent me the rule book.
Yeah.
It was like after, I think it was like the first of the year, you can't
bring for the rut, you can't bring a guest during the rut. And I think you can't shoot does after a certain date either. So it's pretty strict. Now, the way that he wrote the rules, it sounds like they're one, trying to get some age on the bucks, because the antler point restriction is basically the same as Alabama's SOA system, which is 16-inch spread, which is basically outside of the ears, or an 18-inch main beam, which is, in theory, is supposed to protect your 2.5, 3.5-year-old bucks. It's supposed to be killing. Most of the time, a 4.5-year-old buck will meet those requirements, and a 3.5 will usually be like right on the line.
It'll be borderline.
Yeah, it'll be borderline. So so that was one restriction. And then the doe restrictions, like they're trying to keep people from shooting does off the fields too much, because they want those bucks to be coming out in the fields, checking the fields during the rut. And then the trail camera thing.
I will say, just driving around, like we saw a few of the food plots. Most of them at least have shooting houses on them, are actually in decent spots that are not like right on these food plots. Like your old club, it'd be a small food plot, and that shoot, like there's no way to get in and out of the shooting house if there's any kind of deer there.
Yeah.
Like just physically no way. Like you're blowing deer out every single time. Versus like I felt like some of the ones that we saw on this club, they were in a little bit better spots off the food plots where you could shoot into the food plot, but you're not in the plot itself, mm-hmm. which is nice.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it looked good. I mean, it looks, I'm really excited about it. It looks like a place where, and also some of the pictures in the clubhouse, they've got a big wall with pictures where they've been, I mean, there's pictures in there that are dated like 2005. And they've killed some really nice bucks out there.
Yeah, they've killed some really good ones. What else about like getting in a new property is something that people should be aware of, or things that you're paying attention to getting started? Like, you know, what are some of the things, the do's, the don'ts of like hopping into a new property?
Like one of the main things is like I try to kind of take the temperature of everybody in there about kind of like what they're cool with versus what they're not cool with. You know, like just don't like go in there and make people angry. Like don't go in there and start like making your own food plots, cutting saplings and like putting your own little food plots in and doing things like that. Cause I found that I haven't done that, but that definitely rubs people the wrong way. In my old club, there were some guys that did that, and some of the other members were kind of upset about it. So, you know, just get to know the people in there and just kind of see what they're like and kind of play your cards close to your chest. So, I mean, I'm excited about it. It's going to be a fun year. Get some new dirt under my boots. I'm pretty excited. The other thing, too, we had a guy reach out the other day asking about how to find hunting clubs. And the way that I found these clubs was just moving to the area and getting to know people, honestly. That's all it is. Whether it's you're meeting people and like just in town, like I live in a small town, just getting to know people, hanging out at the local coffee shop or wherever, local restaurants, getting to know people at your church, if you go to church. Facebook groups are great for finding clubs. And also going to a local bow shop and ask specifically the bow tech. Sometimes the gun counter guys will know, but a lot of guys that work at gun counters don't really hunt. I mean, some of them do, some of them don't.
That is very accurate.
But if you go to the bow tech, then he almost always will know about, you know, clubs in the area. Mark's Outdoors, Vestavia, Alabama, great example. Mark Smith works behind the counter there. I've known Mark for like 10 or more years now.
He's got all the hookups for all the clubs north of Montgomery.
Actually, he probably does. Like he knows a lot of them. So, but that was what I told the guy that reached out to us the other day about how do you find a club if you're interested is that way. And then also, you know, you can just get on X and start looking around and find properties that look good, especially if it's owned by an individual. And you can reach out to those people, look them up, get their phone number, write them a letter, whatever you got to do. And you can ask about leasing, get some buddies if you want to do your own club. The other thing is a lot of timber companies will have either, you can either reach out to timber companies or you can go to like, for instance, I think Weyerhaeuser, Westervelt, what's the other one? There's another one that I can't remember. It's like more of a Western.
Rainier.
Club. Rainier, that's it. Rainier, they have websites where you can look up like Rainier Hunting Clubs and you can find their little web portal where you click on it and it's like a map and it shows all their properties and you can click on it and it'll say whether they're accepting members or not. So I know Rainier has that. Weyerhaeuser, I'm pretty sure has it. And Westervelt has it. The real question here, are you going to join it?
I don't know.
Peer pressure. I think you should join.
Of course you think I should join. You're trying to help me. You're trying to get me to help cover the cost of it. Y'all need some members.
I don't care. I mean, we'll fill the membership slots, but I just think it'd be fun, dude. Mm-hmm. Meeting you hunting a place. It'd be fun. Mm-hmm. I think it sets up really well for how you like to hunt. I think you'd freaking slay some deer out there for real.
Mm.
All those pines, man.
Mm.
You're a pine fiend, son.
I don't know.
I'm going to make a prediction. If you don't join, then next turkey season is going to roll around and you're going to be like, crap, why didn't I join? Because it's close to the house.
Yeah.
Half the drive of what you normally do. Great bird numbers.
Mm.
You can move on them. I'm telling you. Why would you not join? Just curious. Like, what's your thought process?
The habitat's fine. I kind of don't want to hunt the pine plantations, mm-hmm. which is hard to find in this area of the state. It's like, if you're going to get in a club or get in a lease, it's all going to be big tracts of pines. I don't know. Sam and Blake, this spot, to be honest, completely ruined me. I mean, completely ruined me. I'm like, there's stuff like that in Alabama. Mm-hmm. Problem is, it's like 2 hours from the house. Friggin' forest crap.
Yep.
It kind of goes back to what we talked about last week about someone hunting public land is like hunt the closest thing close to your house,
mm-hmm.
learn it because you can spend more time out there. And it's like, dude, I don't know if I want to be driving 2 hours, even if they had an opening, driving 2 hours one way to go hunt there, especially if I was hunting there a good bit. Like that, you'd get burnt out quick and also just burn a ton of fuel, which is fine. I don't mind doing it, but it's also just like, we have a long deer season.
Yeah, that's right.
Super long deer season. So, I don't know. I'm torn. Because I've thought about it, too. I've thought about that, too. It's like, man, it's super close to the house. I could be there very fast, much faster than pretty much any other piece of public, except for one track. And just kind of learn it. But selfishly, I almost think, kind of let y'all go through a season of y'all not killing some 2-3-year-olds, and then I get in and reap the benefits.
wait until the club starts to stack up some good ones.
When y'all killing 5 or 6 4.5-year-olds, 20-plus-inch beams, I'm like, Okay, I'll step on in.
What's up, boys?
In. Listen, hey, good to see you boys. I ain't seen Cody. I ain't seen you in a while. How you doing, man?
That's true.
I don't know. I don't know. I'm torn. Like, I think it would be good. I don't know.
Going back to last week, we were talking about how you're going to focus on Bama more this year. Because we're not really traveling a ton this year or anything
like that. As of right now. Listen. As of right now. But yes, that is correct.
So, obviously don't say it, but just for my, I'm curious. Where are you going to focus on if we're hammering Alabama this year, what's going to be your main spot?
Got a couple public tracks. I mean, kind of like right in the Golden Triangle. So, go north, south, east, or west.
That's true.
It's like, I don't know. I already told you about the one that you got tore up on. You and
that
Tiff.
Place is awesome.
I think that place would be killer. But yeah, I don't know. I'm just like, the selfishly, the reason I get in a club is for more gun hunting opportunities. And then turkey opportunities, especially like early in the season. Or, I mean, at any point in the season, but especially early in the season. So that's what I'm kind of like thinking. That's what I'm trying to figure out. It's like, is there enough there that makes me want to go over the edge and do that?
Go give it a try.
So
that'd be the first club you've ever joined, right?
Correct. Never joined one.
Never joined a club.
Bounced around the Section 8 hunting club.
Yep.
AKA public land.
Yep.
But yeah, I don't know. I have to look. I might have to do what you just said about going on a couple of those websites, seeing what else is out there. Because there's the other one, it's a little bit further away, that you were talking about joining.
Just oh, yeah.
Acquire some land that, I don't know, that one's kind of interest a little bit too. But I don't think that's a Westerville club. That's like a, mm-mm. It's something else.
No, that one is a Manulife, which is another big timber company.
Was that Manulife an insurance company?
Yeah, they do a bunch of stuff. It used to be like John Hancock, something something.
Yeah.
Now it's Manulife.
But I know that one's even more money than the one you joined, which is more money than your last club. So I don't know. Kind of, I'm just torn.
Yeah.
There's no good decisions.
I think there's good decisions. You just ain't making them.
I mean, I weigh out options and procrastinate until all the slots are filled, and then
and then you're like, crap.
Back on the public we go.
Back on the public we go,
I don't
baby.
Know.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Let's do some Q&As to be determined whether or not Jacob gets in the club or not. All right. This one is from Chance Williams. He says, how do you key in on a spot when the environment is food and cover rich? Jacob.
I mean, it's a pie thicket. I
mean, yeah.
That's exactly what you're describing, food and cover rich is. You know, different pine stands. It's got good understory. It's got great browse. Good sunlight coming to the ground. It's not just pine straw. And it makes it tough to hunt because the deer don't have to move very far at all to go feed. It's funny because a couple weeks ago, Jamie McKay was talking about, he's like, I'd almost rather hunt a pine thicket now than a oak stand.
Mm-hmm.
Even though previously it wasn't like that. Just because there's food and cover real close by. Which to me, it makes it hard getting into a spot, especially if it's browse and hunting it, just because the deer could be bedded so close. That happens a ton. Like they're, you know, if you ever sit on the edge of like a, especially like a clear cut, because a clear cut can be a great example, especially if it's like 2, 3, maybe 3, 4 years old, where you still see into it, they'll bed in it and they'll also feed all in it. And it makes it real challenging, especially as a bow hunter, to get close enough to get an option. Gun hunting, depending on how much you practice, how far you can shoot, you know, you can kind of make some stuff work with it. But that's like that's the challenging aspect of that. So in that circumstance, like hunting wise, it's almost like, yeah, they're going to feed in it. They're going to bed in it, but there's going to be something, if you can find something of higher quality food source adjacent to it, whether it's an SMZ streamside management zone that has some oaks that are dropping and it's kind of like they browse their way to it and then you can catch them there.
Yeah.
That's good. Or, again, a quality food plot. Something of that sorts that kind of draws them slightly out of that bedding slash browsing cover. This is probably one of the best things. Or you're just hunting it during the rut and you're just catching a buck bumping through there because does are feeding in it. You can see into it and try to get a shot opportunity with a rifle. But, I mean, that's tough. That's the thing that, like, I think when you start hearing a lot of the Midwestern guys talk about on podcasts and videos of, like, destination food sources and, like, designated bedding areas, and they're, like, traveling. It might just be a couple hundred yards going to it. Some of us deal with that in the Southeast, but not to the extreme. I feel like a lot of guys in the Midwest are talking about, or they're going to, like, crop fields, or they're going to, like, giant oak flats, something like that, and the deer are traveling a lot further, and you can kind of cut them off in between. You don't always see that in the Deep South, especially if you're hunting pines.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, like, to me, like, the challenging aspect of it. So it's hard to do. How to do it? Great question. Find out. Let me know. That's not how Andrew's club sets up right now.
Yeah, no, it is. It is food and cover rich. And yeah, one, it's like kind of a double-edged sword because sometimes it is nice because, again, going back to what Jamie McKay was talking about, where those deer are covering big distances in maybe a big wood setting where it's not food and cover rich, that, again, that also is kind of a double-edged sword. And where he's at, it's low deer density, so mm-hmm. you hardly ever see any deer because there's so few. But you could look at it as an advantage because they got to get up and they got to travel distance to get to where they have cover that they want or food that they want. But at the same time, you have large areas where there's just no deer. And so if you're hunting in one of those, it's not good. Whereas also your bucks will like tend to disappear. What I've found, at least, again, on my cameras, is when you have a food and cover-rich environment, it seems like the deer just don't go as far. They have tighter home ranges just because they already have everything they need right there, so there's mm-hmm. no need for them to go 2 miles over this way because he's already got the bedding, food, and water that he needs wherever he's at in the summertime. And so that's why we've been saying it for a couple of years now. A lot of the times, these bucks that we find in these pine areas, they usually don't relocate very, very far from summer to winter. So that, I kind of like that personally. And then, yeah, the early season thing, it's tough. If you can find a little isolated oak, I showed you a couple today when we were driving around that I thought looked good. And basically what it is you've got one stand of pines that's a little longleaf stand that they burned. The longleafs are about as big around as a baseball bat. They're probably 12, 15 feet tall. And underneath, it's just ferns and grasses because they burned it like 2 years ago. Right next to it is a section of thinned pines that has saplings and briars and all kinds of crap underneath them. And right there on that dividing line, there's a fire break. And right there at that fire break, there's two pretty big white oaks right there, right in the open, where it's like they're probably going to produce some mass this year. And that's the kind of spot that I like to bow hunt. I've never killed like a nice buck doing this, but I've killed a bunch of other deer doing this, like especially does. Finding something like that where it's just a nice little isolated oak on the edge of that cover that you can get into and you can slip in and bow hunt that. I like that for early season. And then keying on a spot when the environment's cover rich for the rut, for me, it's just getting to where there's two different kinds of cover and you're hunting where you can see in between those, whether you're hunting right on the edge of two different timber stands, whether you're watching like a closed roadbed that you can hunt, whether you're hunting a power line, a gas line, a clear cut, whatever the case may be, a creek bottom that separates two different pine thickets or something, mm-hmm. just anywhere where you can see through that cover, where they're bouncing from cover to cover. That's where it's worked for me.
Yeah. I mean, this kind of goes back to high quality food sources, which early in the fall, if you're dealing with that tight bedding to browse food sources, which is where I think he's talking about. Again, I'm thinking more pines, clear-cut country. The only thing that's going to be a higher quality food source than just that browse, it's because it's limited, it's not available all fall, is the acorns. And it's like if you have a decent acorn production year and oaks are very limited on the landscape, kind of like your club, you're probably going to find some unbelievable feed trees mm-hmm. in some of that. Versus if it's an area where there's a super abundant oaks, it's a really heavy acorn year, there's going to be a lot more spread out and the sign could be a lot more, I guess, spread out or less concentrated. But I think really if you're in that pine country, again, going off this example, high quality bedding, high quality browse, those feed trees, those oaks that can produce very close to it could be something that you really key in on. And then it's just trying to get in clean on it. I mean, that's the mm-hmm. biggest thing. Because, like, also the disadvantage of hunting a place like what we're describing here, where there's food and cover all mixed together in, like, again, a pine stand, like a thin pine stand, is to walk into some of those spots, you are having to walk past, again, quality bedding and quality food sources. So there's to me, a higher risk of you bumping deer going in that are bedded down or browsing around than if it was a little more spread out and less concentrated food and cover. So that's the only challenge I feel like that you deal with in that circumstance, outside of trying to pinpoint where they're going to come out of that cover and that browse to hit some of those oak trees.
Yeah. All right, moving on to the next one. Blake Willoughby said, when are y'all going to make a trip to hunt East Texas?
I'm way more excited about East Texas, South Florida from last week. Throwback. Talked about South Florida last week. East Texas, you got me.
I'd love to go hunt East Texas.
Sometime. Yeah, you get that wouldn't be hard to sell me on.
Yeah.
I mean, probably based off our buddy Seth Johnson, it seems like there's pretty good pressure over there. Got mm-hmm. some big cities close by, some of that public National Forest stuff in East Texas. But seems very similar back home. A lot of pine trees, SMZs, clear cuts, stuff like that. Some river bottoms, big creek bottoms. So it'd be very comparable to what we're used to hunting. And I think that would be fun.
Yeah, that would be fun. It'd be nice to go and hunt out there and get to know more guys out in East Texas. Because, again, we just don't know a lot of people in East Texas right now.
Yeah,
I'd love to interview some guys in East Texas.
If you got some references, some East Texas public land hunters, reach out, let us know some names, and try to get them on the podcast. But, yeah, East Texas would be fun. I mean, to me, East Texas is as habitat-wise is as deep south as any other state.
Oh, yeah,
I mean,
definitely.
It's so comparable. A lot of people, like, I traveled for work, going to, like, Dallas and Houston and stuff, and going through some of those areas, either flying in or driving, I didn't really, I thought of Texas as all being, like, the mesquite stuff. You
brash
see,
country.
Like, yeah, and it ain't like that. Like, literally, you go from, like, Louisiana to East Texas, and it all looks the same.
Yeah.
Pines, big hardwoods, you know, it's pretty, very comparable.
All right, next up, Zach Burke asked, what is something you do now when scouting / hunting that you never would have done years ago? Interesting, very interesting question. What comes to mind?
I thought about this because Jamie McKay mentioned it too, but before I started using Onyx, probably 8 years ago. It was probably right when we started the podcast, or maybe right before the podcast started using Onyx, was I would do what he was talking about. Like, you go and scout a spot and you backtrack the way you came in. Like, you didn't really take, even like maybe pulled up like Google Maps or, what was real popular when we first got started was Bing Maps.
Oh, yeah.
Like, Bing aerial imagery used to be like cat's meow, okay? And, like, you use that, but you still, like, because I was so new at it at the time, especially like high school, getting to college, like, you scout your way in a certain area, and you always kind of remembered where you came from, and you walked out the same way. And that was a big thing. Now I never do that, unless it's, like, so thick, like, I can't go out a different way. Like, I try to find a new route and do, like, loop scouting. And that's something I was talking to Blakely about when we were hunting their club, is, like, always trying to go out a different way than you came in, and, you know, always be looking for new stuff, because you never know what you could run into that you've always missed because you kept going in and out the same way you're comfortable. So that's something that's really different. And then also probably focusing a lot more on finding scrapes. I'd always would look for rubs, because rubs are so easy to find typically and see from a distance. But having like that eye for a licking branch that's broken and hanging down in the woods, and like be able to see that from like 80 to 100 yards away, or like try to keep your eyes out for that, which a lot of times in the past I felt like I would walk by a lot of stuff and never see that. I would see the rubs, but I wouldn't notice the scrapes as much, especially when the ground wasn't worked all that much, but it was more just a licking branch. Mm-hmm. I think those are two different things that I do different now than I used to.
Yeah, I mean, for me, the biggest one's probably the wind sticking and repelling. Because a couple of years ago, I was like, that's the stupidest thing I've ever seen. I'm never going to do that. And now I love it. It's great. Because I can climb as high as I want. I'm getting any tree that I want.
Yep.
You know, that's easy to carry. That's probably the biggest change that I wouldn't have done a couple years ago that I than I am doing now.
I'm trying to think if there's anything else I would do.
That's a great question, honestly.
Let me think of something else. Something I do now that I used to not do. I've been packing out deer for a while now, probably 6 years, 7 years. So that's, I wouldn't say that's different.
Might come back to that one, because I'm going to have to think about that. This one's from Rocky Miller. He said, if I've seen a lot of deer in a field while turkey hunting, is there a good chance they will keep using it in the fall? Probably.
I mean, it just depends. What kind of field is it? Is it a food plot? Is it a pasture? Tilled up crop field or replanted crop field? I mean, I would say there'd probably be some deer using it and going out to it. But the big thing is if you're seeing deer on those fields, like real heavy for some reason right now in the springtime, they're probably still going to be in that general area in the fall, like somewhere fairly close by within 200, 300, 400, 500 yards. So take that in consideration, especially if it's does and it's a doe group, like they're probably going to stay right in that general area. But I mean, yeah, well, I mean, why not? I mean, it's one of those things to me, you scout kind of late summer, early fall, and just see if you're still seeing the tracks and everything there. I'm sure you still are. I mean, deer love openings, get habitat edges, especially if it's not really a food plot, but it's like a fallow field. Like there could be different browse species that are starting to, what is the term called? Sequest.
Alan Summerford
talked about, where like it kind of gets past its prime for browse, but there'll be new stuff popping up.
Yeah.
So there's always opportunity for like that. I mean, back when I was in high school, back in Arkansas, we hunted a ton of old pasture. And do the deer come out there at different times of the year when certain things would be sprouting, especially if we got rain late in November and had a little warm front, you know, new vegetation start sprouting up kind of in that pasture, and the deer would hammer it. So, like, yeah, I mean, I would say they're probably going to be in the general vicinity and something to pay attention to. And also, worth getting the trees, getting the timber, walking around that field and see if you can find some scrapes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I mean, if it's kind of grown up and thick in turkey season where all those grass shoots have come up, and maybe that could be why they're in it. So if it gets brush hogged or mowed or planted in something else, they might quit using it. I mean, you never know. But just generally as a rule of thumb, like, I don't think you can really say whether or not they will be using it. But I mean, if you're seeing deer there, I'd get around in the woods, like you're saying, look around, see what you find. See if you find sign from last fall. Let's see. This is from Darian Moss. Is a saddle setup worth it for strictly rifle hunting? Yes. We have a whole video on it.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I love rifle hunting out of a saddle. For a couple of reasons. Number one, you don't have a metal stand around you that you potentially hit your gun on or something like that and make some noise. But also, if you practice shooting at it, and we have a video on YouTube, maybe you can link in the show notes.
Yep.
It is very easy to shoot your rifle out of a saddle in a bunch of different positions, pretty much 360 around you. The hardest shot in a saddle is really directly behind you at 6 o'clock position. But as long as you have enough time, I say enough time, like you don't need 30 seconds, but if you have 15 seconds to kind of get your gun and slowly pivot around to get a shot, you can do it very easily. You can shoot very stable out of a saddle. In my experience, if you practice and in the right positions, especially shooting off your backpack a few hundred yards, if not further, depending on what you practice and what you feel comfortable with your weapon. But yeah, I love rifle hunting out of a saddle. There's times, because I don't one stick, even though I'll get my stuff for one sticking, that I'll still use a saddle with my climber where I want to get really, really, really high, and I face the tree in the saddle. I'm not like necessarily sitting in the climber, just because, again, I can see a lot more and I can shoot a lot easier out of it than my climber. The climber's great, though. But again, the saddle, the big thing that you'll learn if you're used to using a climber in rifle hunting is having a more compact system for getting up the tree. When I say compact, like, you don't have a climber always on your back. I know some guys that use a climber specifically will, like, kind of pre-hang some, like, at the base of trees and climb up. That's fine. But the cool thing about the saddle is you still have the mobility to kind of get in a bunch of different trees, depending on what sticks you use, whether you use like a set of sticks or if you're going to do one sticking. But also being able to get in smaller trees, then you could probably get a climber on. Like, there's some trees that I've rifle hunted out of that you could never get a climber in, but it's like the right spot. I can still see a pretty good little ways, but I got like great trail intersections close by. And it works really, really well for that. But the big thing is if you're kind of nervous about it, you've got to practice with it. And I'm not even talking about practice climbing with it and climbing down, but also practice shooting out of the saddle, because you're not having to, if people think, because there was a lot of thoughts on this, I mean, probably still today, but I mean, like 4 or 5 years ago, where guys were like, man, I feel like if I'm saddle hunting, I got a freehand shoot with a rifle, and I can't do that very far. If you set it up correctly and you practice with it, you never have to freehand shoot. You're either using the bridge, which is what you're attached to the tree with, or what your tether attaches to, or you're shooting off the tree, or you're shooting off your backpack. So you're always stable when you're shooting. You're never having to freehand shoot the rifle. If you practice the different positions, we have a whole YouTube video on it. So I highly recommend it.
Yeah, I love it. I prefer it over a climber, actually.
Yeah, I do too. I'll be honest. The climber, if you're one of those lazy hunters and you like to catch some sleep in the woods, I can't sleep in a saddle. I can't, which is great because it keeps me awake. But like, if you're the guy sitting in a summit or old man tree stand, and you're going to take a nap for a few hours, there you go. But like, I like the saddle because I don't sleep in the saddle. I know some guys that do. I just don't do that. So it keeps me much more focused, especially during the rut, kind of later in the season and everything. But I still have the mobility to be able to shoot. And also, one thing in the saddle that we don't really ever talk about enough is you can shoot, like, lean back in the saddle where you're higher up. Or if a deer's coming in and you need to get below a branch to shoot, you can lower your tether down and get in a lower position so you can move vertically up and down. Where, like, I feel like in a climber, like, you could stand and shoot and either shoot off the back of the tree if deer comes behind you, or freehand shoot. But like, if you sit down in the climber, you're kind of maxed out where you can get to shoot below branches. And I feel like in the saddle, you just have a lot more variability in how you can shoot.
Yeah, agreed. All right, let's see. Jacob Wilson asked, how do you hunt big mountaintop terrain with big hollers and steep hills and drop-offs on ridges? I would refer you to our episodes last year with Bobby Worthington, along with our in-the-field scouting video with Bobby, because what Bobby hunts and what he showed us in that video is exactly what you're talking about.
Especially as a bow hunter. If you're a bow hunter and you're talking about hunting that terrain, Bobby Worthington's episode, which I'll pull it up real quick, the episode number, would be,
we'll link it also,
great resource. I mean, it just, he's the guy to talk to about specifically bow hunting that kind of habitat or terrain.
Yeah, the good thing about hunting big steep mountains and hills and things like that is that the terrain forces movement a little bit more, or highly encourages movement a little bit more. So when you get on the tops of those really steep faces, the deer are either going to be cutting above that or below that most of the time.
Yeah.
And it's just going to pinch them down a little bit harder. So I actually prefer hunting that kind of stuff.
Yeah, because it does pinch the deer down a lot better. Again, both with your rifle hunting. Bow hunting is a little stressful, especially if you're dealing with a lot of elevation, just because like you could be eye level with a deer, even though you're 20 foot up a tree. But the episode with Bobby Worthington's episode 622, in episode 622, The Ultimate Guide to Rut Funnels with Bobby Worthington. So again, episode 622, be a really good one to kind of go rewatch or listen to and get some reference about how he hunts his ditch funnels, where deer are kind of cutting around the top of ditches. Saddles are fantastic in some of that stuff. I love saddles, especially a real big saddle that's cutting across a big ridge point or ridge system. And then also something that again, I should have killed him. Freaking hurts my feelings. But back when I hunted Arkansas, maybe 3 or 4 years ago, when I killed my bear, that the day before I shot my bear, I actually had some bucks come. I was sitting on a bench off the side of the mountain and had a big finger, had a drainage running next to me that ran off the bench that ran to a big finger point down below me I could shoot. And I had bucks, two bucks, one really nice 8-point come around the edge of the bench that I called in while grunting back in mid-October. And it's like, to me, in steep country and like mountains, they use the topography exactly how you think they would. The path least resistance, working size of drainages, working size of ridges. And it's very noticeable because you can see the sign, because the sign's typically very concentrated around that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. Like from the tracks, the trails, the droppings, the rubs, the scrapes, they're all in those spots. So it's, to me, the steeper the country is like that, the more, I'm not gonna say easier, but you can look at a map, and once you hunt that stuff for a little bit and scout it, you can pretty easily look at a map, but especially a topo map, and figure out exactly how the deer are probably going to travel it, and then also where you're going to find the sign based off the map, and walk in there and find exactly what you're looking for, which is really nice. The biggest thing is just dealing with the elevation gain and loss going in there to hunt, and getting set up accordingly. But we've done a ton of episodes on that. It's fun to hunt outside of Western North Carolina. That stuff's rough. Eastern Tennessee, that stuff's rough. But again, you can kill those deer in those kind of terrain.
Which feeds. That's what Bobby hunts is Eastern Tennessee.
Yeah, East Tennessee.
Yeah.
Yep.
All right. Getting to a point of wrapping up here. This is from Bobby Puckett. He said, is Andrew still shooting peepless, thinking of going that route, but want some honest input? I'm not shooting peepless anymore. One of the reasons that I'm not is because I was shooting an IQ bow sight and I switched and I'm not shooting an IQ bow sight anymore. And that's really the main reason. The IQ bow sights have their little retina lock. I don't even know what you call that thing. It's their retina lock technology on there. And it kind of looks like it almost looks like a bubble level, but it faces you. And it's just like a black dot on a green background. And you set it up to your anchor point. So when you draw your bow, you set up that retina lock to where that green dot or that black dot is right in the middle of that little green area. So when you get drawn, if you see that black dot is canted to the left or to the right, you know that you're canting your bow and it'll throw you off. Well, when I started shooting that a couple years ago, I got sighted in with a peep and everything. And then I eventually took my peep out because I was like, well, this retina lock kind of serves as a visual anchor point for me. And that's what a peep really is a visual anchor point. And now also let me preface this, by the way, I am not the guy who is shooting a deer past like 35 with a bow. I'm hunting thick cover. I'm not shooting distance. So like, do you sacrifice accuracy when you do that? Yeah, probably, but not enough to really matter in my opinion when you're shooting out to about 30 yards. So for years I shot without a peep sight just because I found that again, when I'm hunting down in these little drainages and hollers where I'm normally hunting, it's really shady. I just liked it better. I felt like I had a better sight picture. I could see my pins better. I just felt more comfortable shooting without a peep sight when I had that. So I shot peepless for probably 6 or 7 years. And when I switched to a different sight, I tried to keep shooting peepless with just a kisser button. And it just was never really that accurate. Even at like 30, 35, I wasn't consistent enough. Skill gap there. So I went back to a peep sight. And my groups tightened right back up. So even if you're doing that old system that I used to do with an IQ sight, I still don't recommend that if you want to shoot past 30, 35 yards, just being completely honest. So, I mean, I liked it when I did it, but, you know, I like my setup now too.
If you want to shoot peepless, just pick up a longbow or recurve.
Yeah, pretty much. But it can be done. It can be done. But that's my honest opinion on it. Nick Terry asked, are y'all planning on having Mr. Tony Myers back on soon?
Yes, absolutely. So we are working that out right now, get him back on the podcast. And we found out he's got some great stories that Jay McKay told us about that we're going to have him tell on the podcast. but yeah, Tony Myers, we're going to have him back on the show. Very excited to have him back on. And he had a heck of a season last year, killing some bucks, killed some turkeys this spring. So he's a fantastic dude, and unfortunately I'm not related to him, but I wish I was. Same last name,
yep.
No relation.
If only. All right, last question. We might have to pull up an episode for this. Can y'all cover summer scouting to find public land bucks and flat river bottoms? Flat river bottoms for public land bucks. Personal experience, I don't have much to offer here. I've never really hunted big flat river bottoms all that much. I mean, I have a little bit, but not enough for me to feel like I should give any advice on this. One episode I would definitely point people to is 510, Josh Driver. I feel like that just applies everywhere. Well, what'd you have?
We do have one specific on this topic.
Yep.
But it's rivers and mountains, but the guy hunts both and is successful in both. But it's an old episode from 2021. It's not on YouTube. It's audio only. Episode 264, Keys to Summer Scouting, River Bottoms to Mountains with Paul Patera. Oh, yeah. Paul Patera. Going to episode 264. That's a really good one. I do remember recording that one with Paul. And he's got some great insights for hunting, hunting river bottoms and scouting river bottoms in the summertime. So PK, Paul Medikid, a.k.a. Doug White from Florida. He's been on a bunch in the past. And very interesting conversations we've had with him about his scouting and hunting. This one, it's flatlands what we talk about. It's not necessarily river bottoms. It was episode 388, Big Buck Behavior Patterns with Doug White. It's from July of 2022. Again, episode 388. It's not on YouTube, audio podcast only, Apple, Spotify, iHeart.
What about Austin Anderson last year?
Austin Anderson, yep.
He's hunting river bottoms. I don't know. I can't remember. He's a traditional bow hunter in South Alabama, North Florida, and he does hunt river bottoms. And again, it's a little different down there.
Yep.
But there's definitely a lot of good info in that one.
Yeah. So that's episode. This is on YouTube. So episode 602, hunting a big bucks relaxed area with Austin Anderson. In episode 602. Another one that we've done on kind of river bottoms. I mean, Josh Driver talked a little bit about river bottoms in his, but not to the extent. There was another one that I was just thinking of. The thing about river bottoms, and I kind of go back to some of the Arkansas guys that we've interviewed that hunt some of the bigger river bottoms in eastern Arkansas, is because of the flooding that happens in a lot of these big river bottoms, kind of late winter, early spring, it washes away a lot of those signs. And a lot of those guys that hunt that stuff don't do summer scouting. It's a lot of like early fall, right before season comes in, a lot of in-season scouting.
Oh, yeah.
Because stuff changes so much. And that's like the big thing. So if like you're in a big river bottom that it does flood out every year, like every late winter, early spring, you need to take that consideration when you go and scout, because you might find looking branches. You're probably not going to find anything on the ground that you can tell from last year.
That's a good point.
A lot of rubs, because it gets flooded out, water, standing waters in there can discolor the tree. So it's hard to tell, first off, if it is an actual rub or how old the rub is, because, again, it gets flooded out. And then also cover, too, can change in big river bottoms. Again, if it does flood. There are some river bottoms that doesn't flood all that bad, and it's a little bit different. So just take that in consideration if you're talking about scouting. We do have a lot of hunting episodes talking about river bottoms, especially a lot of the Arkansas boys and a few other ones that kind of worked in there. Oh, and he doesn't scout it. This is the guy I was thinking about, Justin Wright from Missouri. So this is an old episode, still from 2021, episode 306, Killing Mature Bucks as a Weekend Warrior with Justin Wright. Again, episode 306, it's not on videos, audio only. He's in Missouri, but he hunts some river bottom public and has a lot of success in that kind of stuff. I think we talk a little bit about the scouting, but a lot about the in-season scouting that he does in those areas. So, also, another one that I think would be important for if you're hunting river bottoms is Richard Fott, which has been on the podcast a few times.
Mm-hmm.
And it's Fought. Fott is his last name. He's another great resource. Big feed tree hunter from Arkansas. And again, he talks about a lot of his stuff. It's all in season, like trying to find where bucks are at, where does are at, based off what trees produce, what trees didn't produce. I think super, super important for you if you're hunting those river bottoms. But listen, river bottoms are tough, man.
Yeah. No, that's actually a really good point about how everything changes year to year. And you're right. A lot of those guys that we've talked to, they don't summer scout a whole bunch, any of them. All their scouting is in season and maybe a little bit postseason.
Warren Womack.
Yeah.
Or Womack, however you want to pronounce his last name. Yep. Womack. He's another great resource. He was on last year. He's a big river bottom guy. And he does a lot of his stuff in season. It's not summer scouting. But again, another one that I would recommend going back, watching, listen to. Episode 626, which was last October, is when his episode came out. Southern legend Warren Womack, 56 plus years of deer hunting wisdom. Get episode 626. It's on YouTube, audio podcast, all that. He's another good one. He talks about it. But again, he's a big feed tree hunter. But again, a lot of the commonality with a lot of river bottom hunters in the Deep South associates around feed trees, specifically white oaks and red oaks. So, and again, a lot of those guys just find that stuff in season because it's hard to tell. Even in the summer, if you're summer scouting, you see oaks that produce, which ones start dropping and which ones the deer are really associating to. So you got to find a lot of that in season or right before season comes in.
Yep. That's all our questions, man.
Awesome. Well, appreciate everybody. Just going to submit some questions. Again, go over to our website or hit the link below, thesouthernoutdoorsman.com. Submit your video Q&A question, and we'll answer those on some of these future episodes this summer. But thank y'all for watching. Thank you for listening. We'll catch you back here on the next episode from the Southern Outdoorsman podcast. And remember, guys, y'all stay southern.
All right, I'm going to tell y'all how I like to use one of my favorite tools out in the woods, and that is the tracker from Onyx Hunt. So here's how I've been using it lately. I got this new property I'm going to be hunting this year, and the very first thing I did on the property was I went out and I drove all of the roads that are drivable in my truck. And I had the tracker on as I was driving around. So after I got done driving around, I selected the track on my app and changed it to where it's just a solid black line. So now I've got a really nice, easy to see roadmap of everywhere that's drivable in a truck on the property. So here's what that does for me so far. Now I've got an easy to read map of everywhere that you can drive in a truck on the property. But also that roadmap is actually very useful because it makes it very easy for me to see what roads are drivable and what parts of the property are most accessible and what parts of the property are least accessible. Like I said, one of my favorite tools. If you're not using it already, you should be. And if you want to give Onyx a try, go get an Elite membership and use the promo code Southern at checkout. That's going to save you 20% and it's going to help the show out. Know where you stand with Onyx Hunt. If you hunt deer out of trees, you need to go check out latitudeoutdoors.com. They got a little something for everybody, whether you're a saddle guy or if you hunt out of a climber. Of course, Latitude makes some of our favorite saddles and climbing sticks, but they also make some great packs and backpack straps that you can attach to the bottom of a climbing tree stand to make it more comfortable to carry in the woods. Probably my favorite piece of gear I've gotten in the last several years is the Ranger 22 from Latitude. It's like a do-it-all backpack for me. It's compact, which I like, but it's adjustable enough that it gets me through the whole season. It's the only pack I use. I use it in early bow season when I'm not carrying much in the woods, all the way to late January rut hunts in the deep south when it's cold and I'm carrying all kinds of clothes and all kinds of stuff on my back. The Ranger 22 is adjustable enough that I can just use that one backpack all season. And hey, all you Mossy Oak Bottomland fans, they just released the Ranger 22 in Mossy Oak Bottomland. So like I said, no matter how you like to hunt, Latitude's got something for you. Go check them out at latitudeoutdoors.com.
Well, guys, meet your new favorite summer scouting optic. And no, it's never too early to start scouting for the fall. Introducing the Vortex Crossfire Spotting Scopes with three different models of how you glass. Me and Andrew have both used spotting scopes in the summer to go out and glass fresh, clear cuts that's got a little bit of growth on them to find bachelor groups actually feeding in the summer. It's a pretty fun time, and also it's a great opportunity to take your kids out, especially if you can sit in the truck while you're glassing. It's always one of those pieces of optics like to keep in the truck at all times because you never know when you might need it. Be sure to stop by your local Vortex dealer to get out the all-new Crossfire Spotting Scopes or to get 10% off your favorite spotter, head over to eurooptic.com and enter code Southern10 at checkout to save 10% on your order.
You know, one reason that we named our company the Southern Outdoorsman is because we're not just Southern deer hunters or Southern turkey hunters. We kind of hunt everything: quail, doves, waterfowl, rabbits, squirrels, you name it. I know a lot of you guys are the same way, and our friends at Whitetail Hill are like that as well. Whether you've got a hunting club, a lease, or your own property, they've got a blend for pretty much every situation on a piece of ground. I mean, they've got a seed blend for everything. If you want warm season deer forage, check out Summer Bulk. If you need to screen off a plot or cover an access route, Hideaway grows up to 12 feet tall and is built for that exact purpose. You got a duck hole or a pond edge? Check out the waterfowl blend. You want to plant for doves or quail? Check out their dove and quail plot. If you need soil that needs a little bit of work before fall, check out Dirt Doctor. And of course, they got a full cool season lineup ready to go when fall planting time gets here. And if you're unsure about what to plant, go to whitetailhill.com. They've got a seed selection guide on there that'll help you pinpoint exactly what you need on your property. So y'all check them out today. That's Whitetail Hill. Go to whitetailhill.com.